When you get that feeling, you may assume that you're beginning to be less attracted to your partner, in which case, what is there to talk about? He or she is probably not the one, so why prolong the agony? But then you find yourself in one failed relationship after another, repeating the same cycle again and again. If you are avoidant, the first step, therefore, is to acknowledge your need for space, whether emotional or physical, when things get too close, and then learn how to communicate that need. Explain to your partner in advance that you need some time alone when you feel things getting too mushy and that it's not a problem with him or her, but rather your own need in any relationship. This bit is important. This should quell their worries and somewhat calm their attachment system. They are then less likely to intensify their efforts to draw closer to you, which is what makes you uncomfortable the most. Thus, there is a better chance you'll avoid a full-blown pursuit-withdrawal dynamic with your partner. Andre, who has an avoidant attachment style, had been married to Monica for about 25 years when he discovered that he had a slowly progressive autoimmune condition. It was incurable, he was told, but given his age, his life expectancy would probably not be severely impaired. It would require periodic lab tests, though. After the initial shock of the discovery, Andre was able to push the thoughts about his condition aside and move on with his life. Monica, however, wasn't able to do so. She believed that taking the business-as-usual approach was wrong. She tried to convince him on several occasions to get a second opinion and do a thorough search on the internet about his condition. Andre would usually evade these conversations and brush her medical suggestions aside, but sometimes it led to severe clashes between them. Finally, after several months of frustration, he confronted Monica. He knows her involvement stems from worry and concern, but instead of helping, it only serves to remind him again and again of his condition. He trusted his doctor and felt that there was no need for further inquiry. He felt that Monica's behavior was not only ineffective in improving his health, but also harmful to their relationship. Monica realized that she wasn't helping Andre. It was her way of dealing with such a diagnosis, but it wasn't his. She understood that she could be a better, more supportive partner by respecting his wishes instead of trying to force her own. Since then, Monica has been able to censor herself more, though not completely, which has allowed the clashes between them to diminish. Using effective communication to ensure your needs are met in the relationship. Monique and Greg have been going out for a couple of months, and the 4th of July is just around the corner. Monique plans to celebrate the event with a group of friends, but she hasn't invited Greg to join her, at least not yet. Greg is becoming more and more upset by this. He's worried about what this means. Does Monique only see him as someone temporary in her life? Perhaps she's embarrassed by him and doesn't want to introduce him to her friends. Greg doesn't want to confront her directly for fear it will make him seem too eager and needy. Instead, he decides to throw out hints. I'm not sure yet what I should do on the 4th. I've had a few offers, but I can't decide if any of them are worthwhile. In fact, he doesn't have any other plans, but he doesn't want to sound like he's fishing for an invitation. Monique doesn't pick up on his cues. She assumes he really is sizing up his options and tries to help out. At this point, Greg decides to just give up, thinking that if, after all these hints, Monique still chooses not to invite him, she obviously doesn't want him to come. Anger builds up inside him, and he decides he will have to think long and hard about whether Monique is really the girl for him. But what if Greg had used effective communication? He has an anxious attachment style, and the kind of dialogue required by effective communication does not come naturally to him. He is more accustomed to turning to protest behavior. He decides, however, to take a different approach. He turns to Monique. I'd like to spend the 4th of July together. Would you like to come with me and my friends, or would you prefer that I join you? Monique responds that she hadn't thought of inviting him because spending an evening with her old crowd from high school didn't sound like the kind of thing he'd enjoy. But if he was game, why not? A simple question got Greg the answer that he wanted. Even more significantly, after that first successful precedent, they both found it easier to talk openly to each other. What if Monique responded differently and Greg's request had been rebuffed? As with effective communication, you win either way. Even if Monique had ignored his request and quickly changed the subject, he would have learned something very telling. A red flag based on reality and not on Greg's anxious assumptions would have been raised about Monique's ability to respond to his needs and sensitivities. We're not suggesting that Greg should leave Monique immediately if she reacted in this way, but it would expose a smoking gun. Two or three such evading tactics would probably inspire Greg to look for love elsewhere. When should I use effective communication? When asked when to use effective communication, our automatic response is, always. But then often we hear, do I have to bring up every single relationship issue right away? I'm anxious. That would mean expressing every worry and doubt that crosses my mind, and God knows there are plenty of them. Usually, if you address things that are bothering you from the get-go and receive a positive response, your whole demeanor will change. Worries and fears surface more when you are not communicating your concerns and are letting things build up. But at least until you feel completely comfortable using effective communication, we suggest following this basic rule of thumb. If you are anxious, turn to effective communication when you feel you are starting to resort to protest behavior. When something your partner has said or done, or refrained from saying or doing, has activated your attachment system to the point where you feel you're on the verge of acting out by not answering his or her calls, threatening to leave, or engaging in any other form of protest behavior, stop yourself. Then figure out what your real needs are and use effective communication instead. But only after you've thoroughly calmed down, which for someone anxious can sometimes take a day or two. If you are avoidant, the surefire sign that you need to use effective communication is when you feel an irrepressible need to bolt. Use effective communication to explain to your partner that you need some space and that you'd like to find a way of doing so that is acceptable to him or her. Suggest a few alternatives, making sure that the other person's needs are taken care of. By doing so, you are more likely to get the breathing space you need. It's never too late to use effective communication, even if you start off on the wrong foot. Larry got a disturbing email from work one Saturday while Sheila, his partner of 7 years, was out seeing a friend. When she came home to pick up her things for the gym, Larry became anxious and upset. "You're going out again? You just got home. I never get to see you on weekends." Even as he was saying this, Larry knew that he wasn't being fair. Sheila was taken aback by the unwarranted attack. He'd known of her plans, and before confirming them, she had even offered to stay at home with him if he wanted her to. The atmosphere became tense, and neither said a word for some time. After reading something to calm down, Larry realized what his behavior was really about. He was edgy because of the email from work and wanted the security of having Sheila close by, but wasn't comfortable asking her to change her plans. He'd instinctively launched into protest behavior, picking a fight just to engage her. He apologized to Sheila for not expressing his needs effectively and explained the situation. Once the true message got through, she calmed down as well. She gave him the support that he needed, and he insisted that she go to the gym. Although Larry initially resorted to protest behavior, he discovered that with a receptive partner, effective communication, even when employed late in the game, can diffuse a stressful situation. The five principles of effective communication. Like the concept of effective communication, the principles are also very straightforward. 1. Wear your heart on your sleeve. Effective communication requires being genuine and completely honest about your feelings. Be emotionally brave. 2. Focus on your needs. The idea is to get your needs across. When expressing your needs, we are always referring to needs that take your partner's well-being into consideration as well. If they end up hurting him or her, you're sure to get hurt too. After all, you and your partner are an emotional unit. When expressing your needs, it's helpful to use verbs such as need, feel, and want, which focus on what you are trying to accomplish and not on your partner's shortcomings. I need to feel confident in the relationship. When you chat up the waitress, I feel like I'm on thin ice. I feel devalued when you contradict me in front of your friends. I need to feel that you respect my opinions. I want to know I can trust you. When you go to bars with your friends, I worry a lot that you'll cheat on me. 3. Be specific. If you speak in general terms, your partner may not understand exactly what you really need, which may lower his or her chances of getting it right. State precisely what is bothering you. When you don't stay the night. When you don't check up on me every day. When you said you loved me and then took it back. 4. Don't blame. Never make your partner feel selfish, incompetent, or inadequate. Effective communication is not about highlighting the other person's shortcomings, and making accusations will quickly lead you away from the point and into a dueling match. Make sure you find a time when you're calm to discuss things. You'll find that attempting to use effective communication when you're on the verge of exploding is a contradiction in terms. You'll most likely sound angry or judgmental. 5. Be assertive and non-apologetic. Your relationship needs are valid, period. Though people with different attachment styles may not see your concerns as legitimate, they're essential for your happiness, and expressing them authentically is crucial to effective communication. This point is especially important if you have an anxious attachment style, because our culture encourages you to believe that many of your needs are illegitimate. But whether they are legitimate or not for someone else is beside the point. They are essential for your happiness, and that's what's important. A new Miranda's Law of Dating. Effective communication right from the start. In 1966, Miranda warnings were mandated by the Supreme Court. Police were required to Mirandize those under arrest by reading them their rights. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to an attorney present during questioning. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be appointed for you. Do you understand these rights? A colleague of ours, Diane, used to joke about guys who would Mirandize her. That is, inform her of what she had a right to expect when dating them. I don't think I'm ready for a commitment, they would say. Meaning, if it doesn't work out, don't say I didn't warn you. Apparently, like the police, who are protected legally while they interrogate a subject, these guys felt absolved of any emotional responsibility toward Diane once they laid down the law. Using attachment principles, you can create your own secure, rather than avoidant, Miranda rights, outlining your belief that when people fall in love, they are all but putting their soul in their partner's hand for safekeeping, and that you both have the responsibility to keep it safe and make it prosper. By conveying to your partner a secure working model of love and relationships, you are setting yourself up for a secure connection from the get-go. You are wearing your heart on your sleeve. You are able to gauge the other person's response. You are allowing both yourself and your partner to strive for a secure, mutually dependent bond. Communicating Effectively 101. Getting started. When you are not used to effective communication, it can be extremely helpful to formulate a script of the message you want to convey. It's best not to attempt this when you are upset, and it's also important to ignore the advice of friends who suggest indirect methods of trying to get your needs met, such as making your partner jealous. If possible, ask your attachment-designated person, ADP, refer to Chapter 9, or friend who has a secure attachment style or who is familiar with the principles of effective communication to help you compose the right words. When you are sure of the content, Recite it to yourself until you feel comfortable with the way it sounds. Having everything written down can help you get over fears about getting cold feet or forgetting your lines, and make it easier for you to address your partner with confidence. Once you get the hang of it and experience the positive effect it has on your life, using effective communication will become second nature. Exercise. Answer the following questions to determine the topic of your script. Why do I feel uneasy or insecure, activated or deactivated, in this relationship? What specific actions by my partner make me feel this way? The relationship inventory in Chapter 9 can help you with this process. What specific action or actions by my partner would make me feel more secure and loved? Which of those actions do I feel most comfortable bringing up and discussing? Use your response to this last question to guide you toward the topic of your first effective communication. Now, create a short script that focuses on that issue while adhering to the 5 principles of effective communication. Review the examples that follow. Notice how ineffective communication can be interpreted in different ways, while effective communication has only one specific meaning. That's why your partner's response to effective communication is much more telling than his or her response to ineffective communication or protest behavior. Situation? He's very busy at work and you hardly get to see him. Ineffective communication? Protest behavior. Call him every couple of hours to make sure you're on his mind. Effective communication? Tell him you miss him and are having a hard time adjusting to his new work schedule, even though you understand that it's temporary. Situation. She doesn't really listen to you when you're talking, which makes you feel unimportant and misunderstood. Ineffective communication, protest behavior. Get up in the middle of the conversation and go to another room, hoping she'll follow you and apologize. Effective communication. Make it clear that it's not enough that she listens without responding. Emphasize that you value her opinion above anyone, and it's important to you to know what she thinks. Situation. He talks about his ex-girlfriend, which makes you feel insecure. Ineffective communication. Protest behavior. Tell him it's pathetic that he's still talking about his ex. Or bring up other guys you went out with to let him know how bad it feels. Effective communication? Let him know that conversations about his ex-girlfriend make you feel inadequate and unsure of where you stand, that you need to feel secure in order to be happy with someone. Situation? He always calls at the last minute to make plans. Ineffective communication? Protest behavior? Tell him you're busy whenever he does that, so that eventually he'll learn to call well in advance. Effective communication. Explain that you feel unsettled not knowing when and if you'll see him, and that it's better for you to at least have a ballpark schedule of when you'll get together ahead of time. Situation. She screens your calls a lot and gets back to you in her own good time. Ineffective communication, protest behavior. Grin and bear it. Effective communication. Convey how important it is to you to return her calls promptly and how good it would feel if she was to do the same. Situation. He hasn't called for a few days. You're worried that he wants to end the relationship. Ineffective communication. Protest behavior. When he finally calls, tell him you're busy. That'll show him. Effective communication. Inform him that it is hurtful when he disappears and that one of the things that you need most in a relationship is for your boyfriend to make you a priority whenever possible. It's important to remember that even with effective communication, some problems won't be solved immediately. What's vital is your partner's response. Whether he or she is concerned about your well-being, has your best interests in mind, and is willing to work on things. Chapter 12. Working Things Out. Five Secure Principles for Dealing with Conflict. Can fighting make us happier? A major misconception about conflict in romantic relationships is that people in good relationships should fight very little. There's an expectation that, if well matched, you and your partner will see eye to eye on most matters and argue rarely, if at all. Sometimes, arguments are even considered to be proof that two people are incompatible or that a relationship is derailing. Attachment theory shows us that these assumptions are unsubstantiated. All couples, even secure ones, have their fair share of fights. What does differentiate between couples and affect their satisfaction levels in their relationships is not how much they disagree, but how they disagree and what they disagree about. Attachment researchers learned that conflicts serve as an opportunity for couples to get closer and deepen their bond. There are two main kinds of conflict, the bread-and-butter type and the intimacy-centered type. In Chapter 8, we witnessed what happens when people with diametrically opposed intimacy needs get together and, despite their best intentions, struggle to find common ground. We saw how these conflicting needs can spill over into every area of life and often result in one party making all the concessions. Bread-and-butter conflicts are typically devoid of intimacy struggles. Bread-and-butter conflicts. As the name suggests, bread-and-butter conflicts are those disputes that inevitably arise when separate wills and personalities share daily life. Which channel to watch, what temperature to set the air conditioning on, whether to order Chinese or Indian. Such disagreements are usually good because they force you to live in relation to someone else and learn to compromise. One of the cruelest punishments a human being can endure is solitary confinement. We're social creatures and live best in relation to others. Although at times being flexible in our thinking and actions means stepping outside of our comfort zone, it keeps our minds young and active, even allowing brain cells to regenerate. But what looks good on paper, taking another's needs and preferences into account, even when they oppose our own, isn't always easy to carry out. Interestingly, people with a secure attachment style instinctively know how to do this. They're able to lower the heat during an argument and take the edge off an escalating conflict. If you've ever found yourself caught off guard during a disagreement by the other person's genuine interest in your concerns and willingness to consider them, you were probably disagreeing with someone secure. But is a natural inclination helpful for those of us who haven't been bestowed with these skills? Actually, when we take a closer look, we can see that there's a method behind the secure's instinctive behavior. It's less about their magical powers than about their helpful practices. Not only have we identified five specific actions that people with a secure attachment style use to diffuse and resolve conflict, but we believe that they can be learned. Adult attachment theory has proven time and again that when it comes to attachment style, we're malleable, and it's never too late to learn new relationship skills. The Secure Principles for Making Conflict Work. Let's take a closer look at the five principles that secure people use when they're having a disagreement with their partner. Five Secure Principles for Resolving Conflict. 1. Show basic concern for the other person's well-being. 2. Maintain focus on the problem at hand. 3. Refrain from generalizing the conflict. 4. Be willing to engage. 5. Effectively communicate feelings and needs. 1. Show basic concern for the other person's well-being. A cottage in the Berkshires. Frank loves the outdoors and the summer home in the Berkshires that he inherited from his parents. Sandy hates it. She dreads the hassle of packing and unpacking and the traffic they always get stuck in on the long drives. To her, the whole experience is more trouble than it's worth. It took a few bitter fights before they realized that each partner insisting on his or her wishes and ignoring the others ended up making both of them unhappy. They found a system that worked despite their inherent differences in the way they wished to spend their downtime. Today, when Sandy senses that city life is becoming too much for Frank, she takes one for the team and they venture to the woods. Similarly, when Frank sees that Sandy is feeling overwhelmed by traveling, they stay in the city, sometimes for long stretches of time. On those occasions, he makes sure to schedule outdoor activities in order to keep his sanity. It's not a perfect system, and sometimes one of them gets upset and complains, but they're able to work it out, each accommodating the other as best they can. Frank and Sandy both understand the fundamental premise of a good relationship, that the other person's well-being is as important as your own. Ignoring your partner's needs will have a direct impact on your own emotions, satisfaction level, and even physical health. We often view conflict as a zero-sum game. Either you get your way or I get mine. But attachment theory shows us that our happiness is actually dependent on our mates, and vice versa. The two are inextricable. Despite their divergent wishes, Frank and Sandy engage in a kind of back-and-forth synchronicity that gives them both the satisfaction of knowing that the other person is attuned to their needs. From an attachment perspective, this is a hugely rewarding experience. 2. Maintain focus on the problem at hand. George's messy place. On one of our first dates, Kelly recalls, George and I stopped by his apartment, but he didn't invite me up. He said it was being renovated, and he felt uncomfortable having me see it that way. Being a suspicious person, his excuse didn't make sense to me. I leaped to conclusions, conjuring up images of an extra toothbrush in his bedroom and another woman's underwear in his bed. He noticed my mood change and asked me what was going on. I told him that it was obvious he had something to hide, and our date ended on a sour note. The next evening, however, George invited me over. He buzzed me in, and as I was going up the stairs, he opened his door and with a sweep of his arm gestured me in, saying, "Welcome, welcome, welcome." The place was indeed a mess, but we both laughed about it and all the bad feelings were gone. George was able to turn the situation around because he has a secure attachment style. Although his responses might seem natural, if we look a bit more closely, we can see that they wouldn't come so naturally to everybody. George remained very focused on the issue at hand. While Kelly, who has an anxious attachment style, veered off the topic, making personal accusations, George was able to see through her protest behavior and home in on what was really bothering her. His behavior fits well with research findings. Gary Creasy, the head of the attachment lab at Illinois State University, who has a particular interest in conflict management from an attachment perspective, together with Matthew Hessen McInnes, also from the Department of Psychology at Illinois State University, found that secures are better able to understand their partner's perspective and maintain focus on the problem. By responding to Kelly's fears and addressing them quickly and effectively, George prevented further conflict. His ability to build a secure connection benefits them both. Kelly learns that she has a partner who feels responsible for her well-being, and George discovers that he is accepted as he is, clutter and all. When there's a willingness to resolve a specific problem, people feel that they're being heard, and it brings both parties closer together. But secure people aren't always able to resolve arguments in such an elegant manner. They too can lose their temper and overlook their partner's needs. 3. Refrain from generalizing the conflict. The shopping trip. Though both Terry and Alex, who are in their mid-50s, have a secure attachment style, they've engaged in an ongoing fighting ritual for more than 30 years. Terry will send Alex to the supermarket with a very detailed shopping list, crushed tomatoes, whole wheat bread, and a package of Barilla pasta. A couple of hours later, Alex will come back with a similar but not the exact products. He'll have purchased a different brand of pasta and tomato paste instead of crushed tomatoes. Terry gets upset, declares the items unusable, and dramatically proclaims that she'll have to go to the store herself. Alex responds by losing his temper, grabs the groceries, and storms out of the house. He returns with the correct items, but the day has been ruined by their confrontation. Even though Terry and Alex care deeply about each other, they've never really taken a good look at their fighting ritual. If they had, they would have realized the value in finding a different solution. Alex is a space cadet. He just doesn't seem to be able to pay attention to details, so why put both of them through a challenge he can't meet? For Terry, these small details are crucial. She couldn't overlook them even if she tried. This doesn't mean Terry should have to take the entire burden on herself, however. A creative solution is in order. Terry can call Alex at the supermarket to make sure he's putting the correct items in the basket. She can place the order online and have him pick it up, or she can go herself while he helps with chores at home. They have to find a path of less resistance and go with it. One thing is notable, though. Despite their fussing, they do manage to steer clear of a number of destructive pitfalls. Most important, they don't let the conflict spill over into other areas or get out of control. They avoid making disparaging comments or hurtful generalizations about each other. They kept the argument restricted to the topic at hand and don't blow things out of proportion. Even though Terry angrily threatens to go to the store herself, and on occasion does, she doesn't expand it to, "I've had it with you," or, "You know what, you can cook your own dinner, I'm leaving." 4. Be willing to engage. In all three of the previous conflicts, whether resolved peacefully or explosively, the secure partner, or partners, remains present, both physically and emotionally. George is instinctively able to contain Kelly's personal attack and, taking responsibility for her hurt feelings, turns the situation around while remaining engaged. Had he been avoidant or even anxious, he might have responded to Kelly's silent treatment by withdrawing and creating even more distance and hostility. Frank and Sandy could also have decided to dig in their heels. Sandy could have said, "You know what? Do whatever you want, but I'm spending my weekends in the city," and refused to discuss things further. Frank could have done the same. Locked in a stalemate, they'd have spent many unhappy weekends missing each other. Only because they're both willing to stay and deal with the issue do they find a resolution that they can both live with, and in the process, learn to be more in tune to each other's needs. 5. Effectively communicate feelings and needs. Visiting the sister-in-law. Because Tom's job is so hectic, Rebecca barely gets to see him during the week, and she often feels very alone. On Saturdays, she usually visits her sister who lives close by. Tom doesn't typically join her for these visits. He likes to stay home and veg out on the couch. Generally, this is fine with her. But this Saturday, after a particularly long week at work, when Tom was even more absent than usual, she becomes very insistent that he come along. Tom, exhausted from his work week, is adamant about not wanting to go. Rebecca won't take no for an answer and pushes the issue. He reacts by clamming up even more. Finally, she tells him he's being selfish. He ends up in front of the TV not talking, and she ends up going alone. Rebecca acts in a way that is very typical of people with an anxious attachment style. Because her husband's being at work more than usual during the week has activated her attachment system, she feels a need to reconnect. What she needs most is to feel that Tom is available to her, that he cares and wants to be with her. However, instead of saying this directly and explaining what is bothering her, she uses protest behavior, accusing him of being selfish and insisting that he come to her sister's. Tom is bewildered that Rebecca is suddenly behaving so irrationally. After all, they have an understanding that he doesn't have to go to her sister's. How different Tom's reaction might be if Rebecca simply said, "I know you hate going to my sister's, but it would mean the world to me if you could come this one time. I've hardly seen you all week, and I don't want to miss out on any more time together." Effectively expressing your emotional needs is even better than the other person magically reading your mind. It means that you're an active agent who can be heard, and it opens the door for a much richer emotional dialogue. Even if Tom still chose not to join Rebecca, if he understood how she felt, he could find another way to reassure her. "If you really want me to go, I will, but I also want to relax. How about we go out tonight, just the two of us? Would that make you feel better? You don't really want me at your sister's anyway, do you? I will get in the way of the two of you catching up." Preventing Conflict, Attachment Biology 101. When it comes to conflict, it's always about who did what to whom, or how to compromise, or even how to express yourself more effectively. Sometimes, understanding the basic biology of attachment helps you prevent conflict before it even happens. Oxytocin, a hormone and neuropeptide that has gotten a lot of press coverage in recent years, plays a major role in attachment processes and serves several purposes. It causes women to go into labor, strengthens attachment, and serves as a social cohesion hormone by increasing trust and cooperation. We get a boost of oxytocin in our brain during orgasm and even when we cuddle, which is why it's been tagged the cuddle hormone. How is oxytocin related to conflict reduction? Sometimes we spend less quality time with our partner, especially when other demands on us are pressing. However, neuroscience findings suggest that we should change our priorities. By foregoing closeness with our partners, we are also missing our oxytocin boost, making us less agreeable to the world around us and more vulnerable to conflict. The next time you decide to skip the Sunday morning cuddle in bed for a chance to catch up on your work, think again. This small act might be enough to immunize your relationship against conflict for the next few days. Why insecure people don't approach conflict head-on. Several aspects of the anxious and avoidant mindsets make it difficult for them to adopt secure conflict resolution principles. For the anxious, conflict can trigger very basic concerns about their partner's responsiveness to their needs and about rejection or abandonment. When a dispute arises, they experience many negative thoughts and react by using protest behavior, aimed at getting their partner's attention. They may make strong accusations, cry, or give their partner the silent treatment. Fearful that their partner is likely to be inattentive to their needs, they feel they need to really leave their mark in order to be heard. Their response, though often dramatic, is usually ineffective. People with an avoidant attachment style are also threatened by the possibility that their mate won't really be there for them when needed. However, to deal with these beliefs, they adopt the opposite approach. They suppress their need for intimacy by shutting down emotionally and adopting a defensive air of independence. The more personal the conflict becomes, the stronger their urge grows to distance themselves from the situation. To do this, they use deactivating strategies, such as finding fault with their partner, in order to feel less close to him or her. Another study by Gary Creasy, together with two graduate students at the time, Kathy Kershaw and Ada Boston, found that both anxious people and avoidant people use fewer positive conflict resolution tactics, express more aggression, and tend toward withdrawal and escalation of conflict than secure people. Perhaps the similarities in their attitude toward conflict, that is, their basic belief in their partner's unavailability and their difficulty expressing their needs effectively, explain this finding. Paul and Jackie's kid-sized problem. Though Jackie and Paul had been seeing each other for over a year and spend most nights together, Paul has three children that Jackie has never met. Her friends and family are worried about this situation and wonder where the relationship is going. Jackie has tried to address the matter, but Paul feels the time is not still right. Maintaining stability in his children's life is of the utmost importance to him. Every other weekend, when Paul has the kids, he is off-limits to Jackie, who feels that if she raises the subject again, she might tip the relationship over the edge. Even on appropriate occasions, when Paul told her how much he loved her and talked about buying a house together, Jackie remained quiet about the kids and didn't reciprocate his declarations of love. She feels that if Paul really wanted them to be close, he would let her into his life completely, kids and all. When Jackie's parents visit for dinner, Paul keeps talking about his kids and how wonderful they are. After dessert, Jackie's father invites Paul for a short walk. He tells him that his kids sound wonderful, and he's hoping that Jackie will get to meet them soon because he and his wife really like Paul and want to see the relationship grow. Paul assures him that he's very serious about the relationship. Neither of them tells Jackie about their talk. The following week, Jackie has no idea why Paul is so quiet and answers her questions with only yes, no, or I don't know. Finally, she asks him what's wrong. He responds by lashing out, complaining that her father criticized him for talking about his kids, and reminds her of the many times he has expressed his feelings only to have her not reciprocate. She replies that it's hard to open up when he's shutting her out of such a big part of his life. Rather than engaging in the discussion, he gets up, packs his belongings, and leaves, saying that he needs some space. He returns several weeks later, but they still avoid discussing the matter and revert to the status quo. Typical of people who have an insecure attachment style, both Jackie and Paul break almost every secure rule for handling conflict. Neither effectively communicates their needs, and both avoid directly addressing the issue at hand, introducing Jackie to Paul's kids, but each for a different reason. Paul has a very firm opinion on the matter. He doesn't want his kids to meet someone unless it's very serious, and Jackie never reciprocated his love declarations. It doesn't occur to him to ask Jackie if it bothers her that they are separated every other weekend. Though he says he loves her, this doesn't translate into thinking that her feelings should be considered when it comes to his children, a characteristically avoidant attitude. He also assumes that if she doesn't often raise the topic of wanting to meet his children, she doesn't care that much. Jackie, on the other hand, doesn't talk anymore about meeting his kids because she's anxious and worries that by making demands, she may put the relationship in jeopardy. She fears that Paul may decide she's just not worth the effort. Paul also avoids secure principles when he chooses not to tell Jackie about his conversation with her father. Worse still, when they finally do talk about the issue, instead of engaging in the topic, Paul withdraws completely. Paul bottles up his anger for so long that by the time Jackie asks him what's wrong, he's at the end of his rope and is only able to attack her. Jackie, who is also insecure, isn't able to save the situation. Instead of trying to soothe him and calm things down, she resorts to counterattacks. Being anxious, she interprets Paul's words as a personal rejection and responds defensively. Unfortunately, neither can see beyond their own hurt to comprehend the larger picture or what is going on with the other person. As a rule of thumb, sensitive topics, like meeting a partner's children, should always be on the table. Assume that they're important, even if they aren't raised. You might not necessarily reach an immediate resolution, but at least you'll be open to hearing each other, and neither of you will be burying hurt feelings that will burst out uncontrollably sometime in the future. And of course, there is a better chance the issue will be resolved if it is discussed rather than ignored. How to make secure principles work for you. Insecure assumptions interfere with conflict resolution. Specifically, being centered on your own needs and hurts can cause a lot of trouble. Fear that someone isn't as emotionally involved as you or doesn't want to be as close as you'd like to be is understandable. But in conflict situations, such preoccupations can be very damaging. Try to keep a number of truths in mind when you are in the midst of a fight. A single fight is not a relationship breaker. Express your fears. Don't let them dictate your actions. If you're afraid that she or he wants to reject you, say so. Don't assume you are to blame for your partner's bad mood. It is most likely not because of you. Trust that your partner will be caring and responsive, and go ahead and express your needs. Don't expect your partner to know what you're thinking. If you haven't told him or her what's on your mind, she or he doesn't know. Don't assume that you understand what your partner means. When in doubt, ask. A general word of advice. It's always more effective to assume the best in conflict situations. In fact, expecting the worst, which is typical of people with insecure attachment styles, often acts as a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you assume your partner will act hurtfully or reject you, you automatically respond defensively, thus starting a vicious cycle of negativity. Though you may have to talk yourself into believing the positive truths just listed, even if only half-heartedly at first, it is well worth the effort. In most cases, they will steer the dialogue in the right direction. In sum, these are the habits you should keep away from during fights. Insecure conflict strategies to avoid. 1. Getting sidetracked from the real problem. 2. Neglecting to effectively communicate your feelings and needs. 3. Reverting to personal attacks and destructiveness. 4. Reacting tit for tat to a partner's negativity with more negativity. 5. Withdrawing. 6. Forgetting to focus on the other's well-being. Paul and Jackie's conflict is really intimacy-centered and not of the bread-and-butter type. We brought it up to demonstrate how easy it is to hit almost all of the don'ts we listed before in a single dispute. Despite their love for each other, they, 1. Get easily sidetracked from the real problem, your father criticized me for talking about my children. They, 2. Obviously never effectively communicated their needs and feelings. A lot is left unsaid, especially by Jackie, who, 5. Uses emotional withdrawal and doesn't respond to Paul's attempts to get close in other ways. When they finally do talk, after a week of silence, 5 again, they, 4. Engage in a tit-for-tat. Both are certainly also engrossed in their own concerns and, 6. Have great difficulty focusing on the other's well-being throughout the relationship and particularly when arguing. A workshop in conflict strategies. The first step toward identifying your own conflict tactics and changing them is to learn to recognize effective and ineffective conflict strategies. Take a listen to the following situations and try to determine whether the couples deal with their differences using secure or insecure principles. If you think the principles used are insecure, make a list of the secure principles that could be used instead. 1. Marcus booked a mostly singles cruise to Brazil before he and Daria started dating 6 months ago. Daria doesn't feel comfortable with Marcus going on such a trip without her, and she doesn't like cruises. When she raises the subject to Marcus, he responds, "So, I have to do everything with you now? You don't like stuff like that anyway, so why do you care? Besides, I've already paid for it. What do you want me to do, lose $3,000? Marcus's reaction is, secure or insecure? What insecure tactics did Marcus use? What secure tactics could Marcus have used? The answer is insecure. Marcus uses a whole slew of insecure tactics. He generalizes the conflict by attacking her, "What do you want me to do, lose $3,000? And making her sound needy and overly reliant. "So, I have to do everything with you now?" He doesn't maintain focus on the problem, which is Daria's concern about the possibility that he won't remain faithful. He prefers to veer off the topic and make it about money and Daria's neediness. Secure tactics Marcus could use? The best piece of advice for Marcus would be to maintain focus on the problem at hand. Daria's concern is real, and as long as he doesn't address it, this issue will never really be resolved. 2. Following her boyfriend's response in situation 1, Daria caves in. She apologizes for bringing up the issue. After all, this is a trip he'd planned before they even met. She feels bad that she's being so unreasonable, demanding, and dependent. Daria's reaction is secure, insecure. What insecure tactics did Daria use? What secure tactics could Daria have used? The answer is insecure. What's the matter with Daria? He's going on a singles cruise to Brazil 6 months into their relationship? She should by all means express her dismay. But instead of openly talking about her concerns, she backs down. She fears that because she spoke her mind, the relationship may end. So she tries to undo the damage by apologizing for raising the subject in the first place. By doing so, Daria is agreeing to a new unspoken pact in the relationship, that her feelings and concerns are not that important. Secure tactics Daria could use? She could effectively communicate her needs, tell Marcus about her concerns, and how anxious the upcoming vacation makes her feel about the future of their relationship. Marcus's reaction to her use of effective communication will be very significant. If he continues to belittle her and devalue her feelings, then she must ask herself whether she wants to be with someone like that for the long term. 3. On a car ride, Ruth is telling John how concerned she is about their daughter's difficulties in math. John nods throughout the conversation but doesn't say much. After a few minutes, Ruth lashes out. "Why is this only my problem? She's your daughter too, but you don't seem to care. Aren't you worried about her?" John is taken aback by the attack. After a minute or so, he says, "I'm really exhausted, and the driving is sapping all of my energy. I am very worried about this too, but I can barely concentrate on the road as it is." John's reaction is secure or insecure? What insecure tactics did John use? What secure tactics could John have used? The answer is secure. Secure people aren't saints. They can get tired and feel impatient at times, and their minds drift like everyone else's. The key is how they react once conflict arises. Notice how John doesn't retaliate or act defensive when Ruth attacks him. He maintains focus on the problem, answers in a straightforward way, "I'm really exhausted," and shows a genuine awareness for his wife's well-being by validating her concern. "I am very worried about this too." Secure tactics John could use? John did a pretty good job. He averted an unnecessary escalation and calmed his partner down. Imagine if he'd snapped, "God damn it, can't you see how tired I am? What do you want to do? Get us in an accident?" Fortunately, he understood that his wife's accusation came from a place of distress rather than criticism, and he tackled the real problem, assuring her that they're partners where their daughter's welfare is concerned. 4. Steve, who has been dating Mia for a few weeks, calls her on Friday afternoon to ask if she'd like to join him and his friends that night at the local bar. Mia gets upset because Steve almost always wants to meet her with his friends, while she prefers a one-on-one rendezvous. "You're really scared of being alone with me, huh? I don't bite, you know," she says half-jokingly. After an awkward silence, Steve replies, "Well, call me later if you want to go," and hangs up. Steve's reaction is secure or insecure? What insecure tactics did Steve use? What secure tactics could Steve have used? Mia's reaction is secure, insecure. What insecure tactics did Mia use? What secure tactics could Mia have used? The answer for Steve? Insecure. Steve tries to avert a confrontation or an intimate conversation and withdraws instead of engaging. He doesn't try to find out what's on Mia's mind. He simply vanishes. Secure tactics he could use? For starters, it seems that Steve is not really interested in anything serious. Otherwise, he probably wouldn't choose to bring an entourage on every date. If, however, he does want to make the relationship work, Steve should stay focused on the problem and ask Mia what she meant by her statement. Granted, she did sound a bit cynical, but if Steve were smart and secure, he wouldn't take it personally. He would try to see what was on her mind and how it could be used to take the relationship to a higher and more intimate level. Answer for Mia? Insecure. But what about Mia? Her reaction was also insecure. Her attempt to effectively communicate her needs sounded a bit too much like an attack. She will now be left wondering, did I upset him? Did he think I was criticizing him? Secure tactics Mia could use? Mia could have said something like, you know, I'd rather not be with the crowd all the time. I enjoy being alone with you. How about we make plans for us? Effectively communicating her needs. Steve's reaction would have revealed whether he's able to listen to what his partner wants and accommodate her needs. 5. While sitting at a sidewalk cafe, Emma notices her boyfriend Todd checking out other women as they walk by. I really hate it when you do that. It's so humiliating, she says. What do you mean? He responds innocently. You know exactly what I mean. You're staring. That's ridiculous. Where do you want me to look? And even if I was looking, show me one guy who doesn't check out pretty women. It means absolutely nothing. Todd's reaction is secure or insecure. What insecure tactics did Todd use? What secure tactics could Todd have used? Emma's reaction is secure or insecure. What insecure tactics did Emma use? What secure tactics could Emma have used? The answer for Todd? Insecure. Todd evades Emma's underlying concern, feeling unattractive and unappreciated when he checks out other women. Instead, he reverts to withdrawal as opposed to engagement. At first, he has no idea what she's talking about, and later, he minimizes the importance of her argument by saying that it's just a natural part of being male. This is ineffective communication at its worst. Nothing gets resolved. She'll continue to feel upset by his behavior, and he'll feel justified and self-righteous about continuing it. Secure tactics Todd could use? The secure approach would have been to show concern for Emma's well-being by saying that he realizes how lousy his staring must make her feel. He could also try to understand what really bothers her about this behavior and reassure her that he does find her beautiful, maintaining focus on the problem at hand. He could ask her to point out when he slips into this pattern again so he can try to change his behavior. I'm sorry, I do this out of habit, but I realize now that it's upsetting and disrespectful toward you. After all, I get upset when other men look at you, even if you're not aware of it. I'll try to be more respectful, but if I lapse, I want you to call me on it. Answer for Emma? Secure. Emma effectively communicates her needs. She tells Todd how his actions make her feel in a straightforward, non-accusatory manner, or as non-accusatory as can be expected under the circumstances. Secure tactics Emma could use? She did a good job. 6. Dan's sister comes to look after Dan and Shannon's kids while the two go out for some much-needed time together. When they return, Shannon goes straight up to bed while Dan chats with his sister. Later, Dan comes up to their room fuming. My sister is doing us a huge favor by babysitting. The least you could do is say hello to her. In response, Shannon says, Did I really not even say hello? I'm so spaced out. I didn't mean to. I'm sorry. Shannon's reaction is secure or insecure? What insecure tactics did Shannon use? What secure tactics could Shannon have used? Answer, secure. Shannon avoids many insecure hazards. She refrains from generalizing the conflict. She doesn't react defensively and resort to counterattacks. She doesn't return tit for tat. She maintains focus on the problem at hand and responds to it and to it alone. That is not to say that Dan's anger will disappear. In fact, he most probably will remain irritated. But Shannon has managed to take the edge off his anger and avoid escalation.